welcome to In the Thick. I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
And I'm Jamila King, and this is ITT Sound Off.
Yep, it's our final ITT Sound Off of 2019. And I wonder what we're going to talk about. Jamila, we're going to talk about impeachment and then Thursday night's Democratic debate. For all you ITT listeners out there, it does mean that we won't be covering the news over the next few weeks until we're back in the new year. But don't worry, guys. We have some fresh, dope ITT shows for all of you each Tuesday and Friday until the new year. So make sure you check out your podcast feed. So let's just dive into the first topic.
Let's do it. Topic of the hour.
Yes, before we talk about the debate, I think there was a major story this week, and that's the impeachment. So it's official on Wednesday. The House of Representatives voted by a majority, all Democrats, to impeach President Donald Trump. They passed both articles. Obstruction of Congress was one of the articles. Abuse of power was the other one. So President Donald Trump is now the third president in the history of the United States to be impeached. Let's just say Republicans were not really happy about this. For example, Representative Barry Loudermilk, who compared Trump to Jesus.
The Sixth Amendment guarantees the right of the defendant to face their accuser. But not only have the Democrats prohibited Republicans and the president from questioning the so-called whistleblower, his identity has been kept secret. Before you take this historic vote today, 1 week before Christmas, I want you to keep this in mind. When Jesus was falsely accused of treason, Pontius Pilate gave Jesus the opportunity to face his accusers. During that sham trial, Pontius Pilate afforded more rights to Jesus than the Democrats have afforded this president in this process. I yield back.
Yeah, that was one of the clearer moments. There was also a moment of silence by Congressman Johnson out of Ohio for the 63 million people who voted for Trump in the 2016 election. Because, quote unquote, I think he said something to the effect of their voices were silenced. Bizarre. That was awkward. But anyway, now Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, she's holding off sending the articles to the Senate until there's negotiations for the terms of the trial to happen. So it's basically we're in this waiting period because the trial is going to likely be early next year.
Right. This is so exhausting.
I know. Mitch McConnell, like, already has established his position, which I'm like, whatever. Seriously, like, he's basically saying, I'm siding with the White House. I'm working with the White House on this, which I'm like, it's a trial. So here we are. I mean, very unlikely that Trump's going to get removed. So it's everything we predicted, Jamila.
It is. I mean, I can't help but think that, you know, in a way, Trump is sort of producing his own political reality TV shows that he's not starring in necessarily. Like, he's not appearing every week, but he's like behind the scenes pulling all the levers. That's not to say that he wants all of this, but there's just a performative feel to all of this that's so exhausting. And, you know, it takes over everything in our news cycle. And there's so much happening in the world that doesn't get covered because we are so obsessed with impeaching Donald Trump. Not to say that it's not important. It is. But it's so partisan, right? Like, we could have anticipated this was going to happen from the moment he was elected. I think, if anything, you know, if you're really rooting for him to be removed from office, I think something like impeachment will drive him off the edge so that it makes his behavior more erratic.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's important, but I also feel like it's a real indictment on our political system right now.
So it's December 20th, 2019. And he's going to be saying this at every campaign rally that he's going to do. It's like, I was cleared. It was perfect. I told you, witch hunt. They're going after you now. I do a bad Trump, not as good as Maria. But when all this ends, I feel like this is going to get Trump reelected. Unless this sort of changing America wakes up and has the highest voter turnout in the history of American politics.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I stand.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our second topic, which almost got overshadowed by impeachment. And that is this Thursday's sixth Democratic debate held in Los Angeles, hosted by PBS NewsHour and Politico. There were seven candidates on stage, way less than we're used to so far in the race. And we got to hear more from each of them. It was also way, way more white than it's ever been.
Yep.
With Andrew Yang as the only candidate of color on the debate stage. But before we get into how they handled that, as well as other issues they debated, let's just get our hot takes. Julio.
Hot take.
We saw your Twitter power rankings, but who stood out to you for better or worse?
Okay, let's start with Amy Klobuchar for sure. I think she was great. I also thought Warren and Sanders, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, as much as you might hear the moderates are back, they held their own. I do believe that both of them got a lot of points. I think Bernie Sanders, ever since he had his heart problem, he seems more energized. And I also thought, to be honest, Jamila, this was in Los Angeles County. And your colleague, Fernanda Chavarri, wrote a piece for Mother Jones, and she's a former Latino USA producer at Futuro Media. And and she interviewed me about like the fact that will people be talking about, you know, issues that pertain to Latinos, considering the fact that Los Angeles County is 50% Latino. And that got lost in all this. I feel like another missed opportunity for Democrats. Biden did really well. I think he didn't mess up. Buttigieg, there's probably 100 people telling me that he really held his own and he's the front runner. And I'm kind of like, maybe I'm just watching a different debate, but I'm not feeling that with Buttigieg.
Hmm.
And then finally, Steyer. All right. Okay. Friendly billionaire. Maybe that's his role. But then the last thing about Andrew Yang I'm going to say is when he was asked a question about race, he brought up the freedom dividend as like solving racism. And I'm like, seriously, dude? Seriously. So anyway, those are my quick hot takes. What are your thoughts?
First, I think so. Andrew Yang just got a big endorsement this week from Childish Gambino, Donald Glover. He's doing a pop-up shop this weekend in L.A.
Yeah. I'm like singing. Now I'm singing This Is America, but continue. Sorry.
And I just feel like it's so kind of Twilight Zone-ish, you know? But it works, you know, like I feel like at this rate, all of the candidates annoy me just enough that like if they do like a little cool thing, I'm like, huh, interesting.
Oh, so you're totally like buying into this whole like pop culture thing. So, like,
a little bit. Yeah. Like when Tom Steyer, I think he said something that was, I mean, this might be a little quote, but like he was like, China is our frenemy. And if he'd taken it a step further and made the Mean Girls reference.
Hello. If someone says something bad about you, you'd want me to tell you, right? No. What if it was someone you thought was your friend? What do you... Hold on, other line. I'm not taking this anymore.
Good for you, Gretchen.
Hello?
Let's go out.
Okay, hold on. I'm on the other line with Gretchen.
Don't invite Gretchen. She's driving me nuts.
Hold on.
Okay, hurry up.
You know what I mean? Like, I would have been like, oh, he really killed it tonight. But, you know, like, I do think that you definitely missed Kamala Harris. You definitely missed Cory Booker. You definitely missed Julian Castro.
Yep.
Not just for their presence, right? It's not just about having a person of color on the stage, although that's important and symbolic. It's about, you know, particularly in the case of Julian Castro and to an extent Cory Booker, you have folks who, you know, make it a point to talk about issues that impact communities of color that aren't just related to, you know, like immigration or criminal justice reform, which are important. But, you know, that's not the end all be all of issues that folks of color are voting on. So, you know, I just felt like I was watching any other Democratic debate that was super white. Like, these are the debates of my childhood. Not much has changed.
Yeah. So a couple of moments that I thought everyone's talking about, obviously, Buttigieg versus Warren about the wine cave.
So the mayor just recently had a fundraiser that was held in a wine cave full of crystals and served $900 a bottle wine. Think about who comes to that. He had promised that every fundraiser he would do would be open door, but this one was closed door. We made the decision many years ago that rich people in smoke-filled rooms would not pick the next president of the United States. Billionaires in wine caves should not pick the next president of the United States.
Mr. Mayor, your response. You know, according to Forbes magazine, I am literally the only person on this stage who's not a millionaire or a billionaire. So if this is important, this is the problem with issuing purity tests you cannot yourself pass. If I pledged never to be in the company of a progressive Democratic donor, I couldn't be up here. Senator, your net worth is 100 times mine. Now, supposing that you went home feeling the holiday spirit, I know this isn't likely, but stay with me, and decided to go on to PeteForAmerica.com and give the maximum allowable by law, $2,800. Would that pollute my campaign because it came from a wealthy person? No, I would be glad to have that support. We need the support from everybody who is committed to helping us defeat Donald Trump.
And also, given the context of Klobuchar versus Buttigieg in that moment about experience and who has the experience and you're just a mayor.
I look at this a different way. When we were in the last debate, Mayor, you basically mocked the 100 years of experience on the stage. And what do I see on this stage? I see Elizabeth's work starting the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and helping 29 million people. I see the vice president's work in getting $2 billion for his cancer moonshot. I see Senator Sanders' work of working to get the veterans bill passed across the aisle. And I see what I've done, which is to negotiate 3 farm bills and be someone that actually had major provisions put in those bills. So while you can dismiss committee hearings, I think this experience works. And I have not denigrated your experience as a local official. I have been one. You know, I just think you should respect our experience when you look at how you evaluate someone who can get things done.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Mayor, I'll give you a chance to respond.
You actually did denigrate my experience, Senator, and it was before the break, and I was going to let it go because we got bigger fish to fry here. But you implied that my relationship...
Oh, I don't think we have bigger fish to fry than picking a president of the United States.
You're right.
I know people are going to slam me for this, so I'm going to be very careful in my words about Pete Buttigieg. But a lot of people claim that he's a front runner in Iowa. I wouldn't say he's a front runner nationally. He's still polling very low with blacks and Latinos. That's a fact. But I just had a moment, maybe, like I said, I thought I was watching a different debate because I didn't like how he debated against 2 very strong women. And I think he came across a little bit like mansplainy.
Right.
And maybe that's just me.
No, I think you're spot on. I mean, the thing that really got me was when Elizabeth Warren went after him for accepting private donations and doing the Wine Cave fundraiser, and he kind of shot back with, well, you're more wealthy than I am. And it's like, right, but she's twice your age.
Yeah.
And she's had to do more. Like, she was raising children. And so it did come across as pretty mansplainy.
Good. So it's not just me, because I just felt like, I don't know, I just came across like a tone like that.
I just think it's fascinating that the mayor of South Bend, Indiana is, you know, the one who's on the receiving end of attacks in a Democratic debate this far in the game. I don't know what to say about that. You know, like it's no shots at South Bend. I mean, great town, resilient town. And also, who would have thought that that person would be the person who's like leading in some early Democratic Iowa polls?
And, you know, there was this moment when Tim Alberta from Politico, he quoted something President Obama mentioned this week about old white men.
Former President Obama said this week when asked who should be running countries, that if women were in charge, you'd see a significant improvement on just about everything. Yes. He also said, quote, if you look at the world and look at the problems, it's usually old people, usually old men, not getting out of the way. Senator Sanders, you are the oldest candidate on stage this
evening.
And
I'm white as well. Yes.
How do you respond to what the former president had to say?
I got a lot of respect for Barack Obama. I think I disagree with him on this one. Maybe a little self-serving, but I do disagree. Here is the issue. The issue is where power resides in America. And it's not white or black or male or female. We are living in a nation increasingly becoming an oligarchy.
Vice President Biden, I'm going to guess that President Obama did not clear that remark through your campaign ahead of time. What do you say to him?
And I'm going to guess he wasn't talking about me either.
Okay.
And then Bernie's really bad joke just fell flat.
Oh, yeah. I'm a white man.
I was like, ooh.
Yeah, it just came across as a little bit too cheeky, a little too condescending. You know, I think it's hard to look at that stage and not think that, my God, these folks are so old. Like, you know, I will say it was refreshing to see someone like Pete Buttigieg or, you know, some of the younger candidates, because there's an energy there. Right. But at the same time, you know, I respect elders. Like, I think that experience is really, really important. I don't think it's the end all be all, because obviously Donald Trump has never had any experience in government before. But, you know, I think that it's a tough call. It's a tough call because the leading candidates in this election are all over 70 or close to it. And that's scary.
Yeah. And Warren's line about how she turned that one around about her age.
Senator Warren, you would be the oldest president ever inaugurated. I'd like you to weigh in as well.
I'd also be the youngest woman ever inaugurated.
And I will give Andrew Yang this. He did say at one point, it's like, you know, if you put too many men together, like, we become morons. And I'm like, I'll give you that, Andrew Yang. That's true.
Yeah.
Too many dudes in the room, we all become morons. But listen, you kind of brought this up already, sort of about the whiteness of the debate. Even though Yang qualified, there was no Julian Castro, there was no Cory Booker, there was no Kamala Harris, even Tulsi Gabbard. So this was essentially the whitest debate stage of 2019. The quote unquote, you know, diverse Democrats in one of the most diverse parts of this country, Los Angeles County. So finally, about an hour into the debate, there was a question about race, and Yang responded to the question about being the only POC candidate on stage.
What message do you think this sends to voters of color?
It's both an honor and disappointment to be the lone candidate of color on the stage tonight. I miss Kamala, I miss Corey, though I think Corey will be back. I grew up the son of immigrants, and I had many racial epithets used against me as a kid. But Black and Latinos have something much more powerful working against them than words. They have numbers. The average net worth of a Black household is only 10% that of a white household. For Latinos, it's 12%. If you're a Black woman, you're 320% more likely to die from complications in childbirth. These are the numbers that define race in our country. And the question is, why am I the lone candidate of color on this stage? Fewer than 5% of Americans donate to political campaigns. You know what you need to donate to political campaigns? Disposable income.
He didn't mention Julian Castro. Just want to be honest here. I know he mentioned Booker and Kamala, but no Julian Castro. What's up with that? But it kind of goes back to what we were just talking about. It wasn't that whiteness was at play here during the Thursday debate, but also white maleness. You know, Klobuchar and Warren were the only women on stage. And now that we've established this, they had to deal with Mayor Pete's mansplaining. But then there was this final question. They were asked if they could either give a gift or ask for forgiveness from another candidate, which I was like, that was awkward. But what was interesting, that only the women candidates, both Klobuchar and Warren, said they ask for forgiveness for coming across as harsh sometimes, which I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's real to be a female candidate. I think you've seen this in every part of this election so far, is, you know, women being castigated for being outspoken or strong or making points or dressing a certain way. That
right.
is very much still alive in our electorate, no matter how many women are running for president. And, you know, in terms of racial diversity, I mean, I can't underscore how familiar last night's debate felt.
Mm.
I remember kind of watching, like, remotely, you know, not really tuning in to some debates as a kid or growing up, and just seeing how white it was and not feeling like this was my America, you know, like this was not my reality. It means something different for a white candidate to get on stage and profess some sort of like racial justice agenda than it does for a person of color.
Well, like there was a specific example, and I don't know if it was a Sanders one, but I also think when Yamiche Alcindor asked Amy Klobuchar, a great question.
Senator Klobuchar, here in California, people who identify as Hispanic, Black, Asian, or multiracial represent a majority of the population, outnumbering white residents. The United States is expected to be majority non-white within a generation. What do you say to white Americans who are uncomfortable with the idea of becoming a racial minority, even if you don't share their concerns?
I say this is America. You're looking at it. And we are not going to be able to succeed in the world if we do not invite everyone to be part of our economy. Our Constitution says that we strive for a more perfect union. Well, that's what we are in doing right now. And to me, that means, one, that everyone can vote, and that includes our communities of color. This action that's been taken by this president and his people and his governors all over the country is wrong. They have made it harder for African Americans to vote, as one court said, discriminated with surgical precision. What would I do as one of the leaders on voting in the U.S. Senate? One, stop the purging. As Stacey Abrams said, you know, you do not stop having your right to assemble if you don't go to a meeting for a year. Because you don't go to a church or a synagogue or a mosque for 3 months, you don't lose your right to worship. You shouldn't lose your right to vote.
And I think that's your point. I mean, the answer that Klobuchar gave, I thought, was kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that it's hard to look at that stage and not think about voting rights, not think about Stacey Abrams, not think about what happened in Georgia, and not think about what's happening around the country, precisely for the reason that, like, it really doesn't matter if we have a majority minority country, if, you know, our rights to vote, our rights to exercise our democratic power are being trampled upon like they are. And I think that's sort of the underlying narrative that, you know, we talk about it every election, but I think it's going to be really important coming up into 2020, not only voting rights, but the census,
yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
These are really, really important steps that we're going to be taking in the next year. And you see how far we haven't come, right? There's so many countries in this world that are majority minority countries and, you know, where smaller communities of indigenous folks or whatever just really don't have their power because they don't have protections. They don't have their votes don't matter as much.
Right.
It's disheartening. It's really disheartening, especially after all the hoopla that was paid.
Yeah.
After 2008 with Barack Obama, like for like so many years, we talked about how diverse the Democratic Party was becoming. And
yeah,
that clearly hasn't panned out. All right. So let's talk about how this debate covered different issues and how the candidates responded. First of all, shout out to Yamiche Alcindor, who brought up the epidemic of violence against trans women of color,
yeah,
and opening up a much needed conversation about LGBTQ rights.
Senator Sanders, at least 22 transgender people were killed in the United States this year, most of them transgender women of color. Each of you has said you would push for the passage of the Equality Act, a comprehensive LGBTQ civil rights bill. But if elected, what more would you do to stop violence against transgender people?
We need moral leadership in the White House. We need a president who will do everything humanly possible to end all forms of discrimination against the transgender community, against the African-American community, against the Latino community, and against all minorities in this country. But above and beyond providing the moral leadership of trying to bring our people together, what we also need for the transgender community is to make sure that health care is available to every person in this country, regardless of their sexual orientation or their needs.
And we have to mention that another candidate who was not on the debate stage, and that's Julian Castro, he was actually the first candidate in a presidential debate to vocalize his support for the transgender community. ITT fans, if you haven't heard our Tuesday roundtable, I'm just going to plug it really quick. Amara Jones, Molly Woodstock, with Jamila King and Maria Hinojosa discussed LGBTQ rights in the political space. I also thought, Jamila, the immigration section, the questions that were asked, I felt like I was stuck in 2012 when I hear comprehensive immigration reform, Dreamers and DACA, which I'm not saying that they shouldn't be discussed, But I think the immigrant rights community is so beyond those issues.
Right.
And Democrats are missing the opportunity here to really take a stand or put an anchor into what needs to be an immigration debate that goes right after Trump. Like, so, you know, if Trump is so racist and quote unquote bold about immigration, I think you can't be moderate about it.
Yeah.
And Democratic candidates need to stop using, I come from an immigrant family, I'm an immigrant myself. I'm sorry. Like, Amy Klobuchar's immigrant experience, Pete Buttigieg's immigrant experience, even Bernie Sanders' immigrant experience are different.
Right.
Please, this is 2019. And my final point, as much as Joe Biden, I thought, did really well, stop saying we're a nation of immigrants. Stop saying get used to, you know, he did make a good point about like young Latinos being the future of this country, but it still gets into this like good immigrant, bad immigrant conversation. They're just a little bit out of touch with the community right now.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I definitely rolled my eyes when Pete Buttigieg mentioned that he, you know, his father is an immigrant. It's like, yeah. And you also grew up the son of Notre Dame professors. And you know what I mean? Like, and
exactly.
It was kind of tone deaf.
Also, again, nothing about Latin America. I'm sorry. People are forgetting that young Latinos are following what's happening in Latin America, Chile, Ecuador, in Bolivia. They're talking about it. They're talking about what's happening in Argentina and other places, in Colombia, the protests. Someone, please just ask a flipping question about Latin America during this election cycle if you want to get young Latinos engaged in this. Okay, I'm good. Jamila, give me your final thoughts on all this.
Yeah, you know, I also thought that, I mean, I know obviously this is a national debate, we're focused on national issues, but the failure of folks putting things into a global context repeatedly was disheartening considering what's happening in India. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much happening in this world around dictatorial sort of governments, Muslim bans, Muslim law. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so clear that we are part of an international conversation on what it means to have a democracy. Is democracy working? Is capitalism working? Who does it work for? And it seems like a really great opportunity for someone to sort of just round it out, right? Because I think the important part, especially if you are trying to go and get immigrant votes and, you know, trying to appeal to broader communities, is that as folks of color, as part of younger generations, like, we've got family across the globe. We've got friends whose lives are in danger. And, you know, I think it's important to talk about that. I think it's important to bring it up. I think it's important to talk about, you know, the U.S.'s role in what's happening around the globe, because I think that's going to be most of what a president deals with in this next, you know, whoever's elected next. So,
all right. Well, last ITT sound off of 2019. We brought it home, as always. I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
And I'm Jamila King.
Uno, dos, tres.
All right, guys, before you go, in the thick and Futuro Media, I'm just going to be really honest here. We rely on the generosity of our listeners to fund our crucial work to elevate the voices of POC communities. So what you just heard right now here, like, you know, we're a nonprofit. Like, this is what we do. We create these new voices, new conversations for you. So please consider making a gift to ITT and Futuro Media as part of your year-end charitable giving plans. All gifts, large and small, they really make a huge difference. So if you'd like to make a gift, please visit our website at inthethick.org and click the donate link at the top. And seriously, thank you so much for supporting our work. And we're wishing you the happiest and healthiest of holidays. And remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us, because it really, really helps. Also, you can now listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends. Also, catch Jamila King, host of the Mother Jones podcast, every Wednesday. Fantastic podcast.
Thank you, Julio.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I'm a big fan. In the Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell, Noor Saudi, and Lita Hollowell. Our audio engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional, Kept, and ZZK Records. Hey, we'll see you next time, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Happy holidays, y'all.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.